Chicago saxophonist and composer Chris Green has, from jump, carved his own path as a musician. He started young, playing in the award-winning Evanston High School wind and jazz ensembles. He started playing professionally as a teenager, then went on to college at Indiana University Jazz Studies Program. He also studied with renowned professor and cellist David Baker. His versatile resume includes scoring music for the television show Empire and a musical theater production of the children's book Bud Not Buddy. He's had interesting collaborations with artists like The Temptations, Sheena Easton, and Andrew Bird. His real strength lies in his ability as a band leader of the Chris Green Quartet, which has been together for many years and is highly respected in the Chicago jazz world. His music is very alive, soulful, and magical, and his musicians are trusted partners in all of his work. I had the best conversation with him recently. We went deep, right down to the core of who he is as a musician, and we began with his parents' record collection and how that planted the seeds for his own roots in music. We talked about how his mother's retirement as a teacher led him to meeting and working with hip-hop artist Common, and how a live performance at The Space in Evanston led to the release of his most recent album entitled Play Space. Hey, Chris Green.
Hello. Thank you, John, for having me.
I appreciate it. I appreciate you coming on The Sauce to talk about this amazing music that you make.
No problem. Thank you. I'm happy that anybody listening or anybody that takes time to listen or ask about what we do, I'm delighted. So thank you.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's my pleasure. I want to really start from the beginning with you, because were you born in Evanston, Illinois?
Yep. Born and raised. Yes.
Okay. And you went to high school in Evanston, mm-hmm. where you participated in the Evanston High School Wind and Jazz Ensembles. Those are quite critically acclaimed, the ensembles, right?
Yeah. I mean, probably even more so now, but it was like the right series of circumstances at the right time. Like, I was pretty good at the saxophone, throughout high school, but then like the orchestra teacher, who was also I was in band. And so the orchestra teacher, who was also the music theory teacher, like after one of our concerts or whatever, he's like, come over here. I'm like, oh shoot, I'm in trouble. Or maybe he caught me making noise during the orchestra part or whatever. He's like, come over here. I'm like, oh shoot, I'm in trouble. He's like, you're taking my music theory class next, you know, you're sophomore, right? So yeah, you're taking my music theory class your junior year. I was like, does it fulfill the art selective? He's like, yeah. I was like, cool. Like, that's perfect. That's fine. You won't have to do like auto engineering or something. That's fine. And so I was like, okay, cool. This should be easy. And it was just like, you know, my frame of reference for music, you know, got to play a lot in the bands, but my frame of reference for music was just what was on the page. But, you know, he had us like analyzing classical music and classical scores and, you know, playing a record and dropping it in the middle of this big piece. And what do you hear? And, you know, development this and motive that and everything. It's just like you're getting kind of under the hood of like the music that you've heard for years. And it's like, oh, wow. So there's this whole other thing besides just reading what's on the page. And that kind of like set me on the path to like, okay, you know, I can actually start to, you know, maybe I'll play as a part-time whatever. But just getting more opportunities to play. And I just love doing it and getting more opportunities to solo during jazz band. It's like, okay, maybe I can do something with this. So I definitely credit my upbringing in Evanston to that.
Right, right. I mean, it's amazing to be able to have such a high level of training at, mm-hmm. you know, during those formative years of mm-hmm. your youth. Yeah. So that's beautiful. And that of course translated to your college in the jazz studies program at IU.
Yes. Yep. excuse me. So, you know, I got serious about it relatively late, like my end of my junior year when I was taking that theory class. And then like senior year, you start thinking about where you want to go. And so both my parents went to Indiana University. And so they were always like, you know, kind of brainwashing me throughout, you know, like buying me t-shirts there or coffee cups or, you know, whatever. And like little stuffed animals, like, yeah, you're going to go. I'm like, eh, whatever. I'm going to go where I want to go. Doggone it. You know, whatever. You're not going to tell me what to do. And then as it turns out, Indiana University at the time, and still you know, I mean, still pretty a great school, but at the time it was like the number one jazz program. And so I was like, okay. So like, all right, cool. You know, I'll go, I'll audition. And I got to audition for the guy who was pretty much a revolutionary as far as like jazz education, and the guy that basically started the jazz program at the school, Dr. David Baker. So I auditioned for him, and he saw something in me. It was like, all right, you know, let's give the kid a chance. And so I got in, and pretty much again, getting under hood, all this, I just sort of gotten serious about listening to jazz around that time. So when I get to college, it's like, okay, you're kind of inundated with like old recordings, and you have, you know, just, you know, figuring out how to practice and how to absorb all these various like influences and everything else into like what you do. And so it was a good experience.
What are your favorite influences?
Oh, wow. Well, that's a loaded question.
It is a loaded question.
Are you talking musically, or are you talking just jazz, or because we could be here all, this could be a 3-hour long conversation.
I know, easily, right? At the core of you, where does that root begin?
Okay. Well, so neither of my parents were musicians, but they had a great record collection. So my dad was big into like disco and Parliament Funkadelic and just, you know, the funk and R&B that was going on at the time. My mother was my mother's still big into like Motown, like Temptations and like Philadelphia Soul, like the Stylistics and, you know, the Spinners and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And so I always heard that stuff, you know, driving around in the car or playing when my parents would have, my mother would have these bridge parties, and they would play all this kind of stuff, or my dad would play like old funk and stuff. And so that, you know, James Brown, and that kind of, you know, led me to like I still am to this day. If anybody knows me, I'm a huge Prince fan. So pretty much everything that those guys my parents were listening to, you know, like when I heard Prince, it was like, okay, this makes perfect sense because he's the natural extension of all this stuff that I've heard. So, you know, and even, you know, to this day, like, yeah, you know, when I, you know, 9 or 10, when I started listening to him, they're like, yeah, he's weird, but he's pretty much, yeah, he's doing the same thing that we, you know, we see where he's coming from.
Right.
So there was that. And then like, you know, I was born at the right time. So like 1987, 1988, you get the early onslaught of like the first wave of great hip hop, like our friend DMC, yeah, to KRS-One, to Big Daddy Kane, to, right, Public Enemy. So
yeah,
listened a lot of that throughout high school. And then, you know, and then growing up in Evanston, you know, huge diverse population, and I'm hanging out with people who are listening to like R.E.M. and U2 and pulling my coat to Led Zeppelin and stuff. And I had the benefit of like hearing a lot of different stuff. And then when I get to college, there's a bunch of stuff that I'd never even heard of. Like, you know, people are listening to Jamiroquai, or, mm-hmm, you know, people are reaching far back as Steely Dan, which I, for whatever reason, just completely escaped my radar as a kid. But, you know, like Tower Power, and, you know, we're just, you know, so I'm blessed to be in a lot of cases at the right place at the right time, because somebody that I'm really, a good friend of mine will say, he or she will like, hey, we check this out, and we listen to this, and hey, that's really cool, you listen to this. So yeah. I'm just a long-winded answer to your question.
I love it. I want to keep digging deeper. It's beautiful.
So I don't know. Okay. So at the core, like, you know, Prince, Stevie Wonder, you know, but then like as a saxophone player, you know, you're kind of expected to be in jazz band. So you're playing this stuff, like you're playing all this Duke Ellington and Satin Doll and all these like big band stuff, and you're enjoying it, and I'm having a great time. But, you know, it's like, I'm still of the mindset that like jazz is old man's music. And so it's like, it's cool, but you know, it's cool, you know. And I think my dad had one John Coltrane album, called Ohm, which is from the later kind of out period.
Yeah.
And I hated that album. I absolutely hated that album. So when my band director's like, you need to check out some John Coltrane, I'm like, I'm good. We've got Ohm at home. I don't need to hear anything else. That album sucks. And then it's like, no. You should check this out. And so he's like, go to the library tonight and get My Favorite Things. I'm like, fine, whatever. So I grab that. I'm like, put this old stuff on. And it's like, oh my God, this is the greatest music ever. And then you flip it over and it's like, John Coltrane played the bands of Miles Davis. You can hear him on the album Kind of Blue. I'm like, oh, okay, I'll grab that. And then you grab that and you're like, oh my God, this is great too. And then it kind of sets you on the path of like, you know, listening to all this, discovering all this other stuff. So,
right. Yeah. You tapped into the stream of consciousness,
right?
Starting on the other side of it.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. But then, so you were able to kind of grow into, as you understood.
I'm Dawn Burns, and this is The Sauce.
And it still continues to this day. It's just like, you know, you're constantly like, you discover a musician and then, you know, he or she played with these people or sang with these people. And you're like, then you end up going on these kind of like, you know, these never ending listening things of like, okay, what can I learn from her? Or what can I learn from him? Or what can I grab from these various strands of music? So,
yeah. I can remember in early days of hip hop, when those who started ushering in sampling, you know, and exploring jazz, that was when it really resonated with me. It was so exciting in the beginning, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's a very good point. I think that's a very good point, because like right when say like A Tribe Called Quest came out,
and they're
sampling all these great like the 60s and 70s jazz, it's like that's when it really solidified. It's like, okay, there's commonalities, which is great, but then there's the potential, there's creativity, there's some serious creativity with these hip hop guys who are like sampling this stuff, but it's clear that they're not just using it. If they wanted to use something to make $1 million, they certainly wouldn't use like, oh, you know, an obscure Roy Ayers song or something like that. Like, so there's clearly some thought to what they're doing. And then it ends up influencing us, the jazz guys, because we're like looking for new stuff to check out and we're checking them out. So it ends up working out in a lot of different ways.
This is the crossover appeal, Uno Mas, by my guest, saxophone player Chris Green, and his band, the Chris Green Quartet.
I can remember when, you know, the Roots first came out, and I especially remember Guru. And Guru busted that album.
Yeah, Jazzmatazz, great one.
Jazzmatazz, yeah. It was. I was an immediate fan of hip hop right away. It was so exciting, so new. I loved, you know, the rhythms and the music that they hearkened to, and then, you know, the musicality bumped up to that level. And to have all that poetry with all of that amazing jazz music and all that music, it was brilliant and really exciting. And that leads me to, I read that you worked with Common.
Yeah. He's another hometown guy. And so I've had the chance to work with him a couple of times. Once was kind of a private party setting. It was his mother, I believe, was it either a principal or either teacher or principal, or maybe both.
Okay.
But somehow, like, you know, I get the call with this one band I was playing with. We're playing. I'm just going to play a retirement party. So I'm like, okay, cool, no problem. So I get there and we're setting up everything. Who's this party for? It's for our principal that's retiring. It's like, oh, cool, Chicago principal, very cool. And then it turns out it's like Common walks out. I'm like, holy crap! Like, yeah, it's my mother. I'm like, oh, your mother's retiring. So we ended up like working with him. And, you know, at first he wasn't going to do anything, but he ends up performing with the band that I was playing with. And so then a couple times, like a couple live settings, one in particular, he had he's got a not-for-profit kind of charity foundation. And so we were in the house band and we did like a whole set with him. That was a lot of fun. So
yeah, that's beautiful. He's an incredible spirit, isn't he?
Absolutely. Super nice guy. Like, you know, with all the success he's had, he literally like he went to every single musician and like, you know, looked us all dead in the face, was just like, I'm so glad you're here. And I'm like, this is a guy who's been around the world and everybody knows and he's doing big things and movies and everything. And he's literally got the time to look all like an 8-piece band in the face and be like, I really appreciate what you're doing. I'm like, dang, it's really nice.
I mean, you can really hear that in his music, his thoughtfulness. Yeah, absolutely. What do you have coming up? Do you have anything in June, later in June or in the summer? Are things starting to accumulate shows?
It's funny. We during the worst or maybe the worst parts of the shutdown, we had a lot of streaming things, which were very nice.
Yeah, yeah.
Like we had a bunch of those. Actually, no, I take that back. Last summer, we played a bunch of outdoor, like backyard parties, gatherings. So, and actually, that was in a lot of ways, that was almost more fun than like clubs, because like people were so starved for like entertainment, you know, and they were, you know, we would sometimes, you know, there would be like a guarantee with whoever the host was. And then they would like pass a hat around after that. And people were just like hurling money. And I'm like, wow, you all are really, really missing live entertainment. This is fantastic. So that was a lot of fun. And then like this past winter, we did a bunch of streaming gigs, which were cool too. I mean, just like, you know, people could tune in at their leisure and donate or whatever. And that, you know, that was a lot of fun. But we've actually, things have started to open up with like limited seating things, like a couple of the venues that we're playing. You know what? Hey, there's a place in June. I'm sorry. There's a place in June. June 17th, we're playing at a place in the south suburbs of Chicago called the Copper Still Martini Bar and Lounge in Homewood. And we've played there about 3 times, and it's been fantastic. Like, it, just a great room, great listening room. The crowd is just like really amped up, and they're grateful to have live music there, and we're grateful to play for people that want to be there. And so it's just, that's been a lot of fun. So things are opening up. Things are opening up a lot, and people are really into seeing bands again. So
yeah, I'm noticing the same thing. Performing, people seem to be a little more present right now.
Yeah. It's like you don't know what you don't have until you don't have anymore, and then it's like when you take it away and then you bring it back, people are like, oh, thank you, we missed you, you know.
Mm-hmm. You never miss the water till it's gone.
Exactly. Yep.
Thank you, Chris, for talking to me today and for being on The Sauce. I'm excited for the area here to hear your music again. I know that you have played here before, and I'm sure that many will recognize you. And we really look forward to what you have in the future. And please come back and talk to us when you have anything else coming out that you want to let us know about.
Absolutely. I had a blast. Thank you.
I want to thank you for being with me tonight. I had such a great time with these incredibly talented artists. They really opened up and invited us into their fascinating worlds. Be sure to join me next time on The Sauce, right here at the station that informs, entertains, and inspires, 88.1 WVPE, where I'll bring you more artists who really bring the flavor to the music and arts world. You can also stream the episodes by visiting us at WVPE.org. Until next time, peace and love, beautiful souls. Show me, show me, show me.